This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Chuck Connor, President and CEO of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Modern Ag Alliance. Learn more at their website, controlweedsnotfarming.com. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with NCFC's Chuck Connor next. They don't get sick days and no overtime pay. They report directly to Mother Nature, who loves to throw a good curveball. So why is the litigation industry fighting legislation and continuing to push lawsuits against a proven product that is a farmer's best defense against weeds? American farmers have been doing what's best for their land for generations, and they rely on glyphosate as a safe, affordable, and effective tool to control tough weeds and get the job done. No one knows how to feed and fuel a growing population better than the American farmer, but if our farmers lose a critical tool like glyphosate, they'll be stuck with just two options: grow less food or rely on foreign countries. Our farmers need to be supported. Keep glyphosate available for American farmers. Show your support and learn more at controlweedsnotfarming.com. Paid for by Modern Ag Alliance in support of America's farmers. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. The nation is one step closer to a new farm bill, but the battle lines are clearly drawn over the price tag and nutrition programs. Chuck Connor, President and CEO of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives, is a veteran of 9 different farm bills. He's seen his share of challenging debate. But Connor says last week's discussion brought a completely different tone than he's ever seen before.
No, it was different. You know, the discussion was far sharper, and the tone more partisan than what I would describe any historical debate that I've been associated with. You know, there's been a tradition on the agriculture committees where everybody sort of acknowledged that, you know, each member has different interests, different constituencies, but at the end of the day, they never sort of question your morality or certainly question that you're trying to do right by farmers in rural America. And that's all, you know, you heard, sort of heard being fired back and forth on both sides. And unfortunately, Jeff, that's not a recipe that, you know, where we get to the conclusion of a farm bill very rapidly. And I'm hoping maybe this is just something everybody needed to get off their chest, and maybe they'll start working together a little better going forward.
Well, I recall the days of bringing a report card home, and normally 4 D's isn't good. But with regard to Chairman Thompson and having 4 Democratic votes after that process, what does that say? Is this a bipartisan bill?
Well, I will acknowledge being surprised by 4 votes coming. And if I saw the interview with Chairman Thompson afterward, I think he was a little bit surprised that he got 4 votes on that. Let me answer it, though, this way, Jeff, and say, you know, I don't want to leave your listeners with the thought that somehow, because there were 4 votes and this was bipartisan, if you will, that somehow I believe that this is a dramatic step toward concluding, you know, this farm bill, and farmers ought to start looking at those provisions in the House bill as a final product. They should not. There's bipartisanship, and then there's bipartisanship, you know, within the leaders of the House and the Senate that will ultimately be at the table when this bill is finished. And right now, those leaders, you know, are not on board with this bill and have no plans to do so. And if you heard the debate, the ranking minority member on the House Agriculture Committee was extremely sharp in his criticism. Some of the sharpest criticism I've ever heard used within the confines of the Agriculture Committee. So they've got a long way to go yet. But to G.T. Thompson's credit, you know, he got 4 votes, he passed the bill, he moved this thing along, and you have to commend him for it.
40 provisions that were Democratic and 100 or so bipartisan markers. There are a lot of provisions there that were common denominators from the wants of both sides of the aisle.
Yeah, Jeff, one of the frustrating things, and I have told you this before and I have told others, the frustrating things about this current farm bill process is, by historical standards, the differences in positions on this bill are very narrow compared to where we were historically. You know, we're not having any fundamental fights about farm policy, or we're not having any fundamental fights about nutrition policy. These are sort of, you know, they're important, they're big issues, but they're issues that ought to be easily resolved if you could just get people to sort of shut off the, you know, all the teleprompters and everything else and sit down in a room and discuss this. And, you know, my hope, again, maybe is they got a little of this out of their system and can now actually sit down and resolve the differences, which in my view could be done pretty easily if they just made the decision that we're going to work together on this and we're going to produce, you know, a bipartisan farm bill.
From the agriculture side and the crop program, Title I, are the ARC and PLC provisions meaningful enough to make a difference?
Yeah, I think they can be meaningful, Jeff. The, you know, the 10 to 20% increase in reference prices, you know, for a corn farmer puts, you know, the reference price in the range, you know, some of the prices we have seen here in the last couple of months, same way for soybeans. So, you know, I don't think anybody envisioned payments for some of those crops, but with this increase, I think you could see farmers, you know, getting help in that regard. And of course, with cotton and rice, we're already in a circumstance where those payments are going to be meaningful and will be even more meaningful should these reference prices increase. I'll just say, Jeff, I think there is so much support out there for a bump up in these reference prices. Even among people that haven't historically been there, there's acknowledgement that these current reference prices are just not in any way reflective of current market conditions and current cost of production.
From what I've read, the NAMSO Council of Farmer Cooperatives doesn't necessarily have specific language on nutrition. How was SNAP expanded? Was that an expansion that was under the previous farm bill, or did the executive branch make a decision that expanded coverage for those who were food insecure?
Well, it is a complicated program, Jeff, and let me explain it like this if I could. The federal government, through survey kinds of information, makes a determination of, you know, what a typical sort of family of four, you know, purchases at the grocery store. And, you know, they call this the thrifty plan, that grocery basket, if you will, of food, you know, during a given period of time. And they use that basket of food then to determine, you know, what it cost based upon that. And so that basket of food, the thrifty food plan, has been the same for a very, very long time in terms of what they're assuming households of four are going out there and buying. And what the 2018 Farm Bill did was it instructed USDA to look at this, you know, basket of food. It didn't tell them to take any action, but it instructed them to look at that, which they did. And then, you know, Secretary Vilsack made a then decision to put that, if you will, updated information into play for determining food stamp SNAP benefits. And that decision, there was a big change in the thrifty food plan, and that added, you know, in this case, literally hundreds of billions of dollars to the cost of the program.
So
it does not affect the overall benefits. That is tied to inflation and will continue to be tied to inflation, and no one is really suggesting changing that inflationary index on food itself, but it's what they're buying, you know, with those dollars and what constitutes the food needs for a, you know, a so-called family. I've rarely ever seen a reduction from one year to the next in spending. You know, everything is about, you know, holding the, when they hold the increases, no matter the program, they say, you know, they like to call that a big cut. You know, in private business, that's not, you know, considered that, but it's a way government operates, that if you limit the inflationary index in some way, then you've cut massive dollars out of the budget. And that's true of every program. SNAP, you know, certainly part of that as well.
So depending on the side of the aisle you are, and your position on that, of whether there was actually a cut to nutrition or not, the practical standpoint is that no, it wasn't. But from the perspective of keeping up with the times and the trend, perhaps it was. And I don't expect that that debate is over by any sense of the word as yet.
No, I don't think so, Jeff, although, again, this is the whole rub in the Farm Bill. And the battle lines have been drawn. You heard it, you know, literally from virtually every Democrat on the committee. This is where they're making their stand on this issue. So, yeah, in different times, maybe it would be, you know, pretty easy to look at this and say, well, you know, maybe some limit here or some change there might limit the increase, if you will, and we can use that. But those aren't the times we're in right now, Jeff, and that's what makes this Farm Bill, that, you know, that's why it's not done, just to be honest. That's why we're not, you know, we're not quickly moving towards finish either.
You pointed out that the CBO has a certain number of assumptions that they can make. And now that this bill is headed toward the House floor, does it get another look by the CBO? And could that potentially change the outcome of the language, whether it's budget neutral or whether it adds to the deficit?
Yeah, these are dynamic scorekeeping circumstances, Jeff, where CBO, you know, is continuing to look at this, and they will issue a new score, you know, not only on the bill itself, but obviously there's been a number of changes made to the bill. The chairman's mark, you know, was actually a pretty massive amendment that was the first amendment adopted. So that will all, you know, redone, and a new score will be issued before this thing goes to the House.
So now the House Ag Committee has approved a bill, and it's headed to the floor, presumably at some point. So how does this change the dynamics with regard to the Senate? Should we expect Senator Stabenow's mark and the House D's to be parallel?
I think, generally speaking, that would be the case, Jeff. You know, four Democrats joined Chairman Thompson, as we have noted. I'm not sure, as I look at the House floor and all the other Democrats that are out there, I don't see a lot of other potential pickups in terms of Democratic votes for the current House-reported bill. So, you know, in order to pass this bill on the House floor, Speaker Johnson and Chairman Thompson would need virtually, if not every Republican vote. And historically, that just has never been the case. And I'm not sure I see that being a possibility. I mean, as you know, there's been a lot of discord in the Republican Party in the House already in terms of voting on this. And so it's not clear you could get unanimous Republican support for about anything in the House right now. And so there's a lot of members of the House who have never, you know, voted for a farm bill. So it would be highly unprecedented to get every single Republican vote in order to pass this particular bill on the House floor, which, again, is why I'm suggesting that there still needs to be negotiation, bipartisan negotiation with the agricultural leaders, the ranking member on the House Agriculture Committee, the minority leader of the House, people like that. And they're going to be, you know, looking to Senator Stabenow for guidance on those kinds of decisions, I believe, going forward.
So how does Chairman Thompson's success impact the proposal that will likely come from the ranking member, Mr. Bozeman from Arkansas?
Well, I think, you know, it certainly strengthens his hand in the Senate. Senator Bozeman has been, you know, arguing for updates on Title I for all commodities, you know, not just his own southern commodities. And so I think his hand is probably strengthened in those negotiations with Senator Stabenow on the need for that going forward. You know, again, ultimately, it just, you know, it boils down to, you know, is the chairman of the Senate Ag Committee and the chairman of the House Agriculture Committee willing to really sit down and talk seriously about these things without everything being a red line that can't be crossed? And up until this point, that has been the case. If that changes, you know, as I said, these are not huge differences. We could get this done and get it done pretty quickly, but there's got to be a fundamental change in attitude.
If your end goal is to write a farm bill, then that would suggest further debate
and elements for compromise. But if your idea is to propose policy to use in an election year, then this maybe is as far as you need to go.
That could be. I will just tell you, Jeff, with nine farm bills kind of under my belt on this, I've never seen a circumstance out there where farmers and people in rural America respond very well to the "we tried" sort of thing, or "we took the right position." Rural America is pretty practical, and you know, they're looking at results. And, you know, and if you've done anything but haven't produced any results, don't bring it to me, I think is their attitude. And that's sort of the way that I've always advised members of Congress and members of the cabinet on how to treat this stuff, is get it done, and rural America will appreciate it.
Assuming you're pushing toward the goal line, Chairman Thompson mentioned that he didn't see this coming to the floor before September. September is pretty late in an election year.
I think myself and many others have said the very earliest we could probably get this bill done this year would be in the lame duck session of Congress, that period after the presidential elections, but before the new Congress is seated. So if the House could pass this, you know, in September, that would still give us the lame duck session, as has been predicted here, to try and, you know, get with the Senate and get something over the finish line.
Senator Marshall had shared with me that he was completely comfortable with passing another extension and perhaps writing a farm bill with a different majority and a different certain Congress. How does the CBO new budget score, what does it leave on the table for writing this policy if we don't get it done this year?
Well, it's a bit of an unknown, because CBO is unpredictable. Chairman Thompson has found that out, you know, just in the last couple of weeks here. But I think generally speaking, people, you know, believe that just because of the deficit, all the tax circumstances that we face in 2025, you know, pressure on the Fed to reduce interest rates, therefore they're going to be looking at monetary policy pretty carefully, that it's not going to be a good year to get, you know, resources to write a good farm bill, and particularly for Title I, that, you know, there are, most of the programs, SNAP included, you know, are sort of on automatic pilot. The farm programs are not. So it would be very, very hard to get the kind of money that we're talking about needing for Title I out of CBO in 2025. And that's why there is a good, compelling reason to get this done now.
Well, looking at the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives, livestock is a big part of that. There's Proposition 12 language in this to deal with the California law and others that may follow after. How do you feel about that language?
Well, the California circumstance, you know, was very, very unfortunate, and it has generated, Jeff, this national debate over, you know, what, you know, kind of states' rights exist out there to jump in and you know, in a way effectuate in a major circumstance, you know, the flow of meat and, you know, and really all other food products like this. And obviously we are firm believers in interstate commerce. We're firm believers in, you know, federal regulation of these products so that things can move in interstate commerce. So, you know, I'm not totally schooled on all the provisions that have been included yet in the House passed bill. We'll be studying those, but you know, fundamentally, this is an issue that has to be addressed going forward as we see more and more states trying to do their own thing here. And, we're reaching a point where it's just really very disruptive to our entire food system, which is geared towards feeding people, you know, at the lowest possible cost. And I don't think, Jeff, people really want to change that, if you really think about it. You know, the impact on those less fortunate is just immeasurable. And I just don't think, you know, as a policy, if that's the direction we want to go.
I don't know if the voters of California, if they realized that pork prices were going up by an average of 20%.
But I'm looking at how sharp the reaction has been on the SNAP program to, you know, to changes, you know, 6-7 years down the road. And, you know, people talking about, you know, being accused of killing babies and throwing people in the street and stuff like that. But yet those same very activist sort of people are the ones pushing this policy that, you know, as you say, is going to make a lot of food products just completely unaffordable for any even modest income Americans. It's just crazy stuff.
So, Chuck, you have 9 farm bills under your belt. And a farm bill is not written for what's happening today, but anticipating the future. So here's a what if. What if commodities qualify for next generation biofuels and sustainable aviation fuel? What does that do to farm country? And then on the other hand, what happens if they don't? And that demand does not come.
Well, Jeff, Title I is all about a safety net. You know, it's not about price determination. It's not about, you know, income subsidies, if you will. It's there as a safety net for the what ifs that don't materialize. And obviously, if biofuels does materialize and there's strong demand out there driving these products, that safety net will never be triggered. And that's, you know, that would be a good thing. And to some extent, the last decade or so, that's for row crops anyway, and grains, that's been the case. And there's nothing wrong with that because it's a safety net there for maybe something slightly above an emergency. So I think the point that, you know, is being made in the Title I debate now is those reference prices were set, you know, at a time and have been more or less maintained at a time when things were very different in terms of inflation and the cost of production. And that safety net now, you know, needs to be moved up. And it'll still be a safety net, and it's not, you know, it's not anticipated that, you know, every year farmers can put on this reference price to trigger another check. You know, we're not back to those days at all like we used to be in. But it's still there as a cushion for when, you know, those what ifs happen of, you know, something, whether it's export demand, whether it's biofuels or whatever the case, if that's not working for farmers' benefit, there's still the safety net.
Well, Chuck Connor, your career includes time on the Hill in the legislature, certainly time at the Department of Agriculture and shouldering the responsibilities of implementing farm policy, and now with the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives. Thank you so much for being with us on this edition of Open Mic. Chuck, we've done this before, and you know that today the mic is yours.
Jeff, I appreciate that, and I appreciate our long relationship. Let me just say that I really do hope that we can get this farm bill jump-started as a result of the action. Members of Congress, the leaders of the House and Senate Ag Committee, they should use this as a reason now to really sit down and say, hey, we've moved this along substantially. Let's get this done. Let's get it done for rural America, for the farmers and ranchers out there. Give them some certainty in this highly uncertain year that they're facing, and let's do it. And again, I believe that is still a possibility, and I would encourage them to take that very action.
Our thanks to Chuck Connor, President and CEO of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Modern Ag Alliance. Learn more at their website, controlweedsnotfarming.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Galley.